Hey, Jeremy, can we do a time check real quick?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I got 13, 14, 15, 16.
You are rocking and rolling.
Okay, all righty. I lost you there for a few minutes. All of a sudden, I heard myself, and then we went to the show, and I'm thinking, Jeremy's sleeping again. I don't know.
There was an interesting item in the clock. That's all I'll say, but now we are back in business.
It's always someone else's fault on my show, okay?
I knew I was going to get in trouble for that.
No. It's okay. We'll blame it on Gil. Gil's not here today, so we'll blame it on Gil. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. He's been a friend of mine for, gosh, 20 years. He really does a good job when working on cars. He works on family cars and RVs. He works on pickup trucks, work trucks. He works on just about anything, and he really likes to work on vintage cars. Not too long ago, a gentleman had an old VW, a fuel-injected bug, and he needed a bunch of work to it. And on a whim, I called Tom and said, hey, do you know anybody who does that? And he goes, no. And I said, well, good morning to you. He says, why are you asking? I says, because I have an email caller or an email person from the radio show that said they've got this. And he goes, I have all the equipment necessary to do that. And I said, how many people in the world have all the equipment? He goes, well, there's nobody else in Arizona that has the equipment I've got. I says, why are you hiding this? And he goes, you can't believe the work it is to take an old VW that might be 30 or 40 or 50 years old and clean all the old gasoline out of all the mechanized, mechanical items to make the fuel injection work. And I said, that's why they pay you the big bucks, big dog. So anyway, the customer called me or sent me an email and said that he had made arrangements and that Tom was going to put it back together. And just off the cuff, I thought it was going to be probably in the $4,000 and $5,000 range, and that's not the case at all. The bid was less than half that. So it's an interesting finding the right guy, and the right guy in this particular case was Blackwell, Tom Blackwell. So if you're in that area, or if you have a vintage car, or if you live near 40th and Greenway, the only place I can recommend in the northeast quadrant of the Valley is Blackwell Automotive. Okay, I have COVID, and I'm wearing a mask, but it won't really make any difference to you because I'm here and you're there. It was an interesting transition because I haven't been sick in 100 years, so it was really different. But let me tell you what's different about what happened to me and my wife, and we were in two different cities. So I went to bed one night, wasn't feeling great, but I just thought I had just overworked that day. I was working with the horses, and I was building some fencing. And so I wake up in the middle of the night, and I am in a swimming pool. I mean, I'm sopping wet. The covers are sopping wet. The blankets are sopping wet. My pillow's sopping wet. And I'm going, wow. So I get up and dry myself off and figure I'm just going to, you know, go outside and watch TV for a little while. Then all of a sudden I get the chills. So I vacillated for 2 days between being really cold and shivering and being really hot. And then I developed this interesting dynamic where I turned the office air conditioning down to nothing to like Mach 30 below. And so if I was hot, I'd go into the office and work. And if I was cold, then I'd go sit in front of the fireplace that I fired up for the first time this year, the propane fireplace. And I couldn't really figure out what was going on. It's just that's what happened. Well, things got worse and worse and worse and worse. So finally, some friends of ours here in Payson talked to me into taking a test, and I took the test, and I thought you got your results back in a day or so, but it was like 2 or 3 days. It's okay. When I finally got them back, it said I had COVID. But at the same time, my wife says to me, I know you're not doing really well up there. Why don't you come on back to Phoenix? And I said, I got just too much work to do. And she says, well, she says, I've been having some trouble as well. And I said, well, I didn't know you had any trouble at all. And she says, no. She says, it's kind of like I'm shivering and then I'm sweating, shivering. And I go, well, that's what happened to me. Well, when I talked to the doctor, I said, this isn't a symptom I've heard as something that's going to occur maybe before you get COVID. She says, neither have I. So I'm not here to tell you that I'm right or wrong. I'm just here to tell you that I've got COVID and I am recovering nicely. I'm real happy with my recovery. I may have to cough a couple of times on the show, but I'll push the button. I have a button that makes it just makes me go away for a minute just so I can and cough. And Jeremy's really good at that too, making me go away. But it's just interesting to me. So I did a little research and I symptoms of COVID, and I didn't find anything that talked about the chills and the sweats and I'm hot and I'm cold. Didn't find anything. So nevertheless, it's okay. We are both of us. She stayed down in the valley because we didn't want to contaminate anybody else, and I stayed up here. And both of us, between the time we got COVID and the time that we were diagnosed with COVID and our test came back, we had already served our 10 or 12 or however many days of isolation you're supposed to have. So we've added on another 5 or 6 days just to make sure that we're not going to contaminate anybody and do everything we're supposed to protect everybody around us. Through the grace of God, the shop's only had one employee, and that was it. And we haven't had any other crises, knock on wood. Knock on wood. So, nevertheless, that's what's happened in the last 2 weeks to Mark Salem. But if you have a car question or a car problem, now's the time to give us a call. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you're listening to us on the internet, then that number you can call in on is 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. That's toll free outside Phoenix. Anyway, working on cars and talking to customers is really important, but it's no different than the doctor and the horse vet and the plumber and the electrician. We have to have some line of communication open so that we can accomplish our goal, so we can decide what we need to do. And part of that is the discussion and the give and the take and all that other kind of stuff. With cars, what's important is just let's try to remember that going on to the internet and Googling things is not necessarily a very good, productive time for you. And what Mark Salem believes with all of his heart, and has hundreds and hundreds of examples where people have spent an exorbitant amount of money because Herbert, who was on Google, said that he could fix their car over the internet. And then they spent a whole bunch of money, and then the customer ultimately takes it to a shop, perhaps like mine or some of the other shops in town that are affiliated with as us up with a group. And then we look at it and we go, wow, this is something. It's not anything. I can't fix your car over the internet unless we have give and take. And I can't fix your car unless I can ask you to run some specific tests for me. Would you look at the voltage, start the car up, open up the hood, put a digital voltometer on the battery, red to positive and black to negative. I want you to look at voltage, and it's DC voltage is what I'm looking at. What's your voltage? 42. Okay. Somewhere along the line, we're on the wrong scale or something, because I need the answer I need is somewhere between 12 and 13. 12 and 13 volts. So I need you to do this. Now move your negative over to this portion of the car and touch the valve cover. What's the valve cover? This is the problem that we typically would have under those kinds of circumstances. There are shops all over Phoenix today that can diagnose cars in less time with respect to easy stuff, in less time than it's going to take you to go Google it. But it's also a bad idea, and I'm doing this for the rest of the guys that are complaining about this, and I complain about it too, is please don't come in and tell us to fix your car and then hold us if this failure of the... We didn't fix the repair, it's not our fault. Somebody else has the steering wheel to this. And all of us are very cautious about that, because what happens is the wives, especially the wives and the girlfriends, come in and say, I want you to flush my fuel injectors. Okay, why are we doing that? Well, we just need to do that. Okay, are we trying to fix something? My boyfriend or my husband said just flush the fuel injectors. Okay, I'm going to write it down that you've instructed us to flush your fuel injectors. And that we don't have any symptoms that would necessitate this, and we're not going to provide any guarantees whatsoever about the success of this flushing of the injectors, because we don't even know what the symptom is. We don't even know what's going on. And Herbert, the guy on Google that answers all the car questions, he's a federal prisoner in New Hampshire. And he's just having a whole lot of fun every day of his life as he tells people how to fix their car while he's in the penitentiary. The idea is it's difficult at best. I'll give you an example of something that sounds so simple, but I think you'll find out it's not so simple. Hold on just 1 second. Okay, so this is, you have an electrical problem in your car. Now, when you usually have an electrical problem, it's not going to start. It may only go click, 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 or it may go rrr, rrr, or it may not make any noise when you hit the key. Or you have a situation where when you hit the key, the headlights all the electricity goes out, and then when you let go of the key, it comes back on slowly. There's all these dynamics, and so you don't know if it's the alternator or the starter or the key switch or the neutral safety switch or the solenoid. You don't know. An electrical systems test in the vernacular of where I live, and I think 99% of the shop owners in town would agree with this, it's just a simple process looking for defects and defaults. We're just looking to make sure that, for instance, we're going to check your battery with the keys in our pocket. Motor's not running, hood's up, check the battery. Hopefully, the battery is somewhere between 12.5 and 13 volts. The car's not on, the doors are shut, the hood's open, and we're going to check the battery. 12.5 to 13 volts. Now, we're going to then start it up, and during the time it cranks over, we're going to watch the voltage, and it better not drop below 9.6. Well, we had 12.5, and it better not drop below 9.6 when we crank it over. And it does, or it doesn't. Then when the alternator comes on, now you've just started the car and the alternator has been lit up. We're telling the alternator, okay, big dog, it's your turn. The alternator comes on. Now remember that 12 to 13 volts? Well, the alternator is going to probably take it from 13 and go north of that, just depending on how much capacity the battery has. How much more power can we send to the battery? How empty or how full is the battery? And then we're going to look at the diodes. And the diodes are these little bitty things that electricity go north and south, but not south to north. It lets electricity move one way, but not back up. So we can check the alternator and the diodes real quick. And so then we're going to turn on all the accessories, the air conditioning, the headlights, the high beams, the flashers, the fan motors. We're going to do everything. And we're going to look at the voltage, and hopefully still the alternator is able to maintain somewhere between 13 and 14 volts. Now, even though you have a 12-volt battery in your car, the range of voltage that your car is going to experience as you use it every day is going to be between 13 and 14 volts. So a 12-volt battery is a 12-volt battery, but don't tell anybody, but a fully charged 12-volt battery is really 13 volts. It's a fully charged battery. So a 12.2 is 12 volts and 20%. And 12.8 is 12 volts and 80%, or 8-tenths of a volt. And 13 is really kind of fully charged battery. So people will... I'm part of a group that does kinds of questions on the internet, and it's not uncommon for someone to tell somebody else, well, your alternator's bad because you say it's at 14 volts, so you need to replace the alternator and that'll fix your problem. Nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. So it's not like you have to spend a whole lot of money getting good advice, but what you have to do better is not fall into this big, deep, dark hole thinking that the shop is going to listen to someone you met on the internet and Googled this problem, and he's going to tell you, and you're going to tell the shop how to fix your car, because that just doesn't work. And when we're much better because we're there with the hood open, and we're much better at diagnosing the car right then and right there. Obviously, the intermittent problems are create a problem all by them all by themselves. Okay, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 24 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and I can be reached at 602-508-0960. This is a live show. We're delayed about 10 or 15 seconds for, in case I use a bad word, Jeremy can fix it. The idea is that you can call in, and we're going to ask you what year, make, and model of car you got, and tell us about the symptoms. What's it doing or not doing? What is it? What's different today than it was yesterday? What's your concern? That kind of stuff. 602-508-0960. Back in 1988, when I first started on radio in Phoenix, the number one question we had was, where's your shop? And it was never about me and my shop. It was about the beauty of being able to help people and have this face-to-face, you know, discussion with them and to make our industry look as good as I could make us look. As you can imagine, that might have been tough then, and it might be even tougher now. Nevertheless, what really drove drove me to make the best car repair shops in Phoenix, according to Mark Salem, is because I knew I couldn't service everybody's car in the world. So I identified a bunch of shops all around Phoenix that were friends of mine, guys that I knew. These guys had been in business for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. They were all smart. They were going to be around. They had second generations coming in behind them with sons or daughters or nephews or something like that. So that's how the best car repair shops list got created back then, was just to identify geographically. Kurtz Automotive is at I-17 in Bell. He's been on our list for a very, very long time. I don't remember ever having a complaint about Kurtz. What I do remember is when I refer people to him, because geographically he's close to where they live or work, I really do know that this is going to turn out good. I really do know and have all the faith in the world that the consumer is going to call me back and say, they did it, they found it, they fixed it. It's just a matter of if you've got the skill level, if you've got the training, if you have the equipment, then there is processes and procedures to find the reason why every time on Thursday morning at 8 o'clock the horn honks in your car. Okay, it's just we can figure that out. My industry, we. So Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell, if you're in that area and you want somebody to change your oil, or if you don't have a repair shop and you want to try something different, then I can promise you Kurtz will treat you fairly and you will like them. That's Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell. When it comes to diagnosis, that's the biggest, that word there scares all of us in the automobile industry, because it's the how much is to diagnose it. The problem with that is here's the real question in a different way. How much is it going to cost for you to tell me where the water leak is under my house? That's really hard. How's the plumber going to do that? And then you can tell me where it's at, then tell me how much it's going to cost to fix it. Well, I can't tell you how much it's going to cost to fix it till I know what it is and where it is. And those are the dynamics is with respect to the car repair industry. We just don't know. So if you have a short and intermittently the car doesn't start, then most of us know a procedure, and we all use pretty much the same procedure, to go through and check all the electrical system for weaknesses, bad connections or values that are too low or too high. Give me that again, Jeremy.
His name is Newell, like kind of like Mule, but Newell.
Okay, okay. Just give me a second here. Okay, so the diagnostic procedures is going to change depending on what it's all about. But what I'm seeing now is most everybody's just coming up to a big number, knowing full well that they'll be a hero if they come in underneath it. You have to be able to trust the shop that he's going to say, I charged him for 100 minutes and I found it in 10. But I'm just going to deduct a little off the top. Ugh. You'll never know, and neither will I. And sometimes neither will the shop owner, because the technician didn't tell anybody. The idea is that it's very difficult to diagnose how much is it going to cost to find it and how much is it going to cost to fix it. Well, it's going to cost you $150 plus or minus to find it, but I can't tell you how much it's going to fix it until after I find it. So I can figure it out, but it's a two-part process. So I'll do the best I can. I'll treat you fairly. Every shop on my list, you can find at marksalem.com, that we're all doing a really good job in making sure that we can find and fix problems. We're sharing information, and each and every one of us understands the value of making sure the customer leaves with a fixed car and doesn't feel like that we took advantage of them. Newell, good morning.
Good morning.
Newell, I'm going to ask you a really big favor because right now I'm 14 seconds away from the top of, or the bottom of the hour, so I can't get to you right now. So I'm going to ask you if you would please stay through the break, and you'll be my very first hello, Newell, if you don't mind. So if you'd stay there, I'd appreciate that. 602-508-0960. Well, just like we promised, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going straight to Newell because he hung through the break with us. Thank you, Newell, for holding on. What can we do for you?
Well, I had a power steering leak, and I took it to a guy, a mechanic there on 35th and Cactus, and they said they fixed it. They put a pressure line on it, a new one that. They said they had to replace all the rack and pinion, too. So it cost me about $2,400, and now it's leaking again.
Wow.
It's leaking. I should have took it to one of your guys, but I didn't, so.
It's okay. I think at this particular point, I would probably take it someplace else and not tell them any of the story because they'll be able to see that there's a bunch of parts underneath there anyway. But the question is what's leaking? That's all. Right now, it's what's leaking.
Yeah.
On your rack and pinion, the only thing that leaks is you have the rack itself,
yeah.
and you've got seals on either tie rod end to spin the wheels left and right. So you got those, you got input, then on you got a pump with two hoses and a pressure hose going to the rack and then a low pressure line going back to the reservoir. So this isn't really a big area of concern. But yeah, I think it's in your best interest for you to find somebody that you just say to them, can I kind of stand? I promise not to do anything. I won't take a bunch of your time. But when you get it up in the air and you're looking at it, can I just stand there and I'll keep my mouth shut and you just kind of point out what you want to tell me, and see if you can get yourself in underneath the car there. But this is the worst case scenario because
Yeah, I took a sample of the oil. I put a piece of cardboard under there, and then I took a sample of it. I was going to go have it tested to make sure they didn't, oh, that's an oil leak or something like that, you know.
Well, it's going to be pretty easy because it's either going to be clear. Some power steering fluid is clear, and most of it's red.
Yeah.
And of course, engine oil is brown. So, can you tell from where underneath the car it's leaking? Is it on the passenger side, the driver's side? Is it in the center? Can you tell?
No, it's on the passenger side.
Okay.
Back a little bit in there. So it'd be right. It'd be under where the reservoir is for the power steering, or in that area, or the power steering pump.
Yeah.
It's on the. But I'm looking straight at the engine, you know, standing there. It'd be on the left side there.
Okay. All right. Can you, with the flashlight, can you look at the different pieces underneath the hood there? Can you do that? Can you?
Yeah, I probably could. Yeah.
Okay. This is how I do it. If you was my neighbor, and I'd say, okay, this is what we're going to do, Newell. I'm going to get inside the car. And I'm going to start it up, and I'm going to turn the steering wheel all the way to the right-hand side, and I'm going to hold it all the way to the right, and I'm just going to gently rev the motor. Yin, yin,
okay.
Yin. And then I want you to look, and I want you to see if you see anything spraying, and I want you to tell me if there's a leak and you see something dripping. And then we're going to do the left side. And then, Newell, I'm going to have you open up the hood and look down in the engine compartment. But If I pressure the system up by turning the steering wheel to a locked position all the way to the right or all the way to the left, and then I hold it there and I just gently rev the motor, I'm putting that system under maximum amount of pressure. And if there's a leak, I'm going to find it right then and right there.
Yeah, you think after I kept the truck a couple of days and all the money I spent on it, they would have got it fixed. But
is it leaking in the same place as it was before, or have they moved the leak?
About the same place. I got a Nissan Frontier with four-wheel drive. It's got that plate under there. So he told me, well, we had to pressure spray that off pretty good under there, so you might have a leak or two for a while, you know, because it's running off that skid plate that's under there above the transmission or below the transmission. It's been 3 weeks since that, and then all of a sudden it started leaking.
Okay.
So I made sure I waited a little bit.
Yeah. The next thing we need to know is okay, we now have a leak. It's either another leak or the same leak, but it doesn't make any difference. We just need to know where this one's at. Now, let me just throw a couple things out here. So we got the reservoir that you fill with fluid, and it feeds the pump, and then the pump feeds pressure to the rack. So, and now we also have a return system. So the return system is under low pressure, but the pressure system is under high pressure. Well, when you turn the steering wheel all the way to one side or the other, called the lock position, and you rev the motor up, you're really taxing that system. It's not uncommon for us to literally see the fluid leak. We can see it leak or even see it spray. But
yeah, I seen some this morning when I started it up, and I sit there for a while, then it started leaking down there.
Okay.
You know, so.
You don't want to take it back to them?
Oh, I could take it back, but I called you so you could kind of run me through how I should do it.
Well, I'll tell you how I do that. I just say to them, you know, I just want to be there with you kind of when we're looking at it. So I won't bug you and I won't tickle you and I won't ask you a jillion questions, but I just kind of like to perch myself next to your right shoulder and kind of see what you see. Okay. So if that's okay with you, I'll bring the truck over and then you guys go ahead and you know, put it on the rack and then don't do anything till I come out. And then you guys kind of do it in front of me so that I can learn from this. So could you look and see what that is? Now, not too long ago, funny you said Nissan. Not too long ago, we had a Nissan with a remote reservoir, and it had a power steering leak in it. And what had happened is that the reservoir itself was leaking, and it was dripping down the tube that fills the pump. Then down there, we also had a bad clamp. So we didn't get the leak up high. So the reservoir, the fluid level got to where the leak was above it, and it stopped leaking. But if you added fluid to it, then it would throw out that last 5 or 6 or 7 ounces. And ultimately, we found that this nipple that comes off of the reservoir was cracked. And so we slid the hose up higher on the nipple and put a clamp up high, and that fixed it. But it didn't fix the crack, so we felt bad about it. Yeah. So we just put a new reservoir in for him. And we just said, here's the old one. We didn't see this part. It's one of the two, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they'll treat you the same way.
I'm going to go back and try, you know, see what they can do.
Okay.
Hopefully they will. They're supposed to be a reputable dealer. One of my neighbors told me to go there, and wow.
Okay, and if it's a dealer, you might get that. Well, the people aren't interested. They aren't allowed in the shop and stuff like that. And then I would say, I'm willing to waive my responsibility or waive any liability on your part. All I'm going to do is just stand there, and you're going to point and show me. So this is kind of a show and tell moment for me, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so. I kind of didn't understand why they had to replace the rack and pinion when I know there's two places to. I read on Google search, and there's some where you can put new seals in, and that'll be fine, you know.
You're right. That's where the tie rods slide in and out of the rack. You can. However, if your truck had, if your truck's 10, 12 years old and it's got 150,000 miles on it, I don't want to put new seals on a rack that's been around the world six times. Because the success rate is going to be 50% or less. And so I'm putting brand new parts in a very old rack that has been driven, like I said, around the world six times. So
I've been a lot of hunting with it. So.
Oh, and then see, now there you go. You and all your beer drinking buddies and stuff out there playing in the mountains and stuff. That just further, and I'm teasing you, of course. I'm teasing you.
Yeah, I did a lot of deer hunting and elk hunting. So.
Okay. So those are, there's sometimes that you know, there's sometimes you just gotta upgrade and go to a new piece. I can rebuild your alternator and I can rebuild, excuse me, I can rebuild a lot of your stuff, but there comes a time where then a rebuild unit or a new unit is the best for the customer. So, Newell, thank you very much. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. 602.
Okay, Mark, thanks a lot.
You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I have five lines. And all five of them are available. We'll be right back. 48 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you have a car question, or if you'd like to start a conversation, or if you have a question about whether you're right or your wife's right about how to use cruise control, when to use cruise control, when not to use cruise control, these are the things that I can help you with. I don't necessarily know everything there is to know, but I am good at saying I don't know, but I'll find out for you. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're more than welcome to join us anytime you want. And the idea behind it is it's just start with what's the problem. Tell me what kind of car you have and what's the problem. So I have a car that's 10 years old. I can't decide whether I want to trade it in and get another one or whether I want to fix it. Okay, so what's wrong with it now? Well, the rack and pinion is leaking. Okay, well then let's talk about that. So I can help you with that. 602-508-0960. There's a shop on the North I-17. Tom owns Action Auto Repair, and I've known him since 1983. I always really respected him because at the time that I met him in 1983, he was selling what those big box engine analyzers were called. They called scopes. Remember that? We put it on the scope. Well, he sold one that was made by Behr, B-E-A-R. And I bought one from, he was selling the competitors and I bought the Behr one. And we met then. And so we've had a very great relationship since then.
Caller Lenny.
In this sense that both of us understand back then that he wanted to sell that big box scope analyzer and I was going to buy this one. But at the end of the day, Tom knows he owns his own shop and has since 1983. He's been around a very long time. He has tremendous diagnostic skills. He has really good customer service. His staff is really good with diagnostic and the discussion that goes along with all of that. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then, of course, Action Auto Repair would be a good place. I would say you start. Try an oil change and just see what goes on from there. Jeremy, who was that gentleman?
First one up is Lenny.
Lenny, good morning.
Morning, Mark. I listen to your program a lot, and you always say that you like to share the temperature to run around 220. I can't get anywhere near that. My owner's manual calls for a 15-pound thermostat. Even puts it up to a 16-pound. The hottest temperature I can get is at 192.
Okay.
What's the problem here?
What kind of car?
When there's another gauge where there's another gauge that shows between hot and cold. It shows right in the middle. It's normal between hot and cold. But the electronic readout can't get anything higher than 192.
Okay. What kind of car truck is it?
It's a Buick LeSabre, V6, 3.8 V6.
What year, though?
Buick. It's 2002.
Okay. And you talked about a 15-pound cap. Is that the spec?
15-pound thermostat.
No, right? No. The thermostat's not measured in that. The radiator cap is probably a 15 or 16 pound cap.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I meant to say. The radiator cap.
Okay.
15.
Okay. And so that's good. We need to use the right radiator cap. But what's the thermostat? Is the thermostat at 195?
Where is the thermostat? I don't even know where the thermostat is.
Typically, you follow the upper radiator hose from the radiator, and the upper radiator hose will take you to the thermostat housing. Okay, because the gate of warm water coming out of the engine and going into the radiator, the gate is the thermostat. So the thermostat is going to close and not let any water circulate until it gets hot. And then the thermostat will then open and allow a complete circulation of fluid. So, let's do something simple first. Tomorrow morning, go out there and pop the hood and take the radiator cap off. Okay? And then I want you to, do you have somebody that will start it and kind of hold the idle up steady for maybe a minute or two? Okay. I don't want to see any movement of water in the radiator except rippling of water, just the vibration of the engine. I don't want to see any movement. Here's what I'm doing. If the thermostat is stuck open, you're never going to hit operating temperature because the thermostat is stuck open. So it's not going to close and let everything get hot and then open and so forth and so on. So the easy way to determine is just watch the water in the radiator when you start it up first thing in the morning when it's cold, and it should be closed. And all there should be is rippling of the water, but no movement of the water. And so
with the cap off there and looking up the water level, until it starts to run, all of a sudden starts bubbling out of the radiator top. Water starts kind of pushing out.
Well, it shouldn't do that. We're doing it for the first thing in the morning when it's cold.
Oh, right. Not when it's cold.
Yeah. Yeah, the system has sat all night long and it's stabilized and it's levelized and all that other kind of stuff. So you're going to take the cap off. You might lose lose an ounce of fluid maybe at the most. But it doesn't make any difference. And you start it up and it may come out of it and just kind of spit some out a little bit, but then settle down. I just don't want to see any movement. I don't want to see flow. I don't want to see movement of the water inside the radiator. To be honest with you, most of us old guys, it wouldn't take us 3 minutes to determine whether or not that radiator, whether the thermostat is open or closed. It could be gone too. Some people just take them out, and sometimes the shop says, "Well, I'll fix your overheat," and they just pull the thermostat. How does the heater work on that, by the way?
Fine.
Good, nice and hot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Heater works. Okay.
Well, that's good, because if the heater works and blows good, cold, warm air, then that means there is a thermostat in there. Otherwise, you wouldn't be blowing a good, cold, warm air. So the water would go through the radiator so fast and move around so fast that it would never get warm. I'm sure you need a 195 thermostat, and I'm sure the thermostat and the gasket.
Next caller, Wayne.
Where is this thermostat in the system? Where is this located?
It's on the intake manifold. It's at the front of the intake manifold. It's right there. It's called a thermostat housing, and the thermostat housing connects to the upper radiator hose, and the other end of the upper radiator hose connects to the radiator.
Okay. I got you now. All right. Very good.
And so
all
that's...
Mark, thank you.
All right. Good luck. You betcha.
I'll work on it. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Lenny. You're welcome. Who is Jeremy?
We got Wayne up next.
Wayne, good morning. How can I help you?
Oh, good morning. I've got a 2013 Hyundai Veloster, and I love the car. I got 129,000 on it. Something happened recently that's really turned me off about the car. In the passenger side doors, it has three doors, and the passenger side two doors are not able to open. It started out that they would only open from the inside, and you couldn't open them from the outside. And then, so I quit driving it for a while, and then I was going to take it into the shop. I looked it up on the internet, and it just blew up all of these Hyundai door opening problems. And it's like $1,500 at the dealers to get that repaired. It's a cable. I guess it stretches out. Have you ever heard anything about it?
No, but, I mean, the story I hear all the time, not necessarily just about this particular issue, but, yes, they make mistakes when they build cars and put in terrible parts all the time. And so it's something that, you know, it's something that comes up. Here's what I'm thinking. Each door has its own activator, right?
Yes.
Okay. So one shouldn't affect the other. So I'm unclear as to how we can have multiple doors, because we're not going to have just one activator that's going to open up door number one, door number two, door number three, door number four. Each one of them has their own activator. Now, are either one of these doors sliding doors?
No, it's a little Hyundai Veloster Turbo, the coupe.
Okay.
Like a little sports car.
And it's got four doors?
No, three doors.
Three doors, so it's got the tailgate and the two...
No, it's got the passenger side and the driver's side, the front doors. And then in the back, it's only got the one door, and it's kind of designed in so you can't really see it that well.
Okay, but...
it's a third door.
The third door, is it at the tailgate part of the car, or is it on one side?
No, it's one side. It's on the passenger side.
Okay. Well,
and then it's got a tailgate, too. You know.
Okay. I have not heard of this. It's not like the Hyundai's a 20% of the cars on the road out there. I'm quite sure, with as much chatter you've already seen on the internet, that Hyundai knows about it, and it's not likely they're going to let this burn the whole company down. So if there's a mistake, you're probably going to be in line with a lot of other people getting it fixed. But you need to get in line to let them know that you're part of the problem. So you need to call and make an appointment, go in, tell me what the estimate is to repair this, and go from there. We'll have more information on the other side of the hour. We'll be right back. Morning to you, and hopefully everything in your world is good. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and if we're going to talk about cars for another hour, and if you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and Mark, you hang on tight there because you're my first caller. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive service. I've known Chuck since 1982. I've worked with Chuck. I know that he knows the difference between a good tech and a bad, and a good repair and a bad, and all the rest of that stuff. So in Sun City, unfortunately, the only one I know, have personal knowledge about, and I trust the family, is Auto Dynamics. So they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Mark, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have a year 2000 Mercury Sable. It's a front-wheel drive V6. And it's got about 147,000 miles on it. I bought it brand new. And I noticed in the last couple of months that I'm sitting at a stoplight after not driving very long, maybe 2 miles, my foot on the brake, it'll seem like it's missing. So I noticed that the RPMs is bobbing a little bit when that happens. It doesn't seem to matter if I have it in neutral or in drive. It bobs a little bit. Maybe it bobs a little bit more. Feels like the engine's missing during these times. And I recently had the three things done, because the same thing happened to me about 8 years ago on the same car. And among other things, they replaced the PCV valve, and that seemed to fix it. But what they also did now recently was change the spark plugs. And they did a VPS fuel system service. So a spark plug, six of them, VPS fuel system service, and then a PCV valve, but it's still happening. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on this.
Well, yeah, I do. Hang on a minute. I don't think that I like the idea of diagnosing or looking at the tachometer needle and coming to the conclusion that we need to start flushing stuff, we need to replace spark plugs and replace PCV valves and all the rest of that stuff. There's nothing scientific about that circle. Nothing. So if that car would have come into my shop, and I can speak for 150 other shop owners, we're going to be able to sit in the car, we're going to be able to put our hand on the hood, we're going to be able to open the hood, put our hand on the air filter, and we can feel and we can see if the engine's missing or if the motor mount's broken. And the motor mount is causing the uneven roughness that's mimicked by the tachometer needle. None of that. There's just no science there. So I'm not going to fix a car because the needle's wavering.
That's just something I noticed, and I told them to it, and I brought it into them, and they said, well, we don't see that symptom right now. They couldn't get that to occur, but then we decided together that, okay, spark plugs are needed because they've never been done, and then...
Well,
by the way, the transmission fluid seems to be at the proper level.
Well, this isn't the way we fix cars. So I don't know if it's you or them or both of you, but this is not the way we fix cars. You're in a bind right now because for whatever reason, somebody has decided that we're going to start diagnosing cars, we're going to look at different symptoms, and we're going to come to the conclusion that the spark plugs need to be replaced. That's very troublesome for me. I got to tell you something. My panties are wadded up kind of tight right now. If one of my technicians came in and told me this story right now, and then I turned around to the shop foreman and he said, yeah, we already put spark plugs in it, and we already flushed the injectors and all that kind of stuff, I would use bad words. I would use lots of bad words. So the question is who, which man out there, which master technician out there put their hands on this motor? Is it missing or not? And if it's missing, how come we don't have a check engine light? And how come we don't have some kind of code? We don't have any of that. We don't have a check engine light. We don't have a code. But you're telling me it's missing. So how can that be?
Definitely missing. It's not any better than it was after they did all this. So.
Okay.
Well, I'm wondering what the next step should be. Do you have a shop that you'd recommend around the area of 92nd Street and Thunderbird and Scottsdale?
Yeah, go to Blackwell's.
Blackwell?
Yeah. He's 40th and Greenway.
Okay.
But you have to start this process, and you have to do it right. So you call up and you make an appointment and say, I want to show you what I'm concerned about.
Okay.
That's it. Don't tell him anything else. No one cares. Show me what you're talking about. Because Blackwell and his staff are just, they're good enough to put the old mono on the engine and say, yeah, it's got a miss. Or they'll plug in a scanner real quick and they'll run through some serial stream data real quick and they'll say, there's nothing here that indicates that this is bad. I can't tell you how many times we've replaced motor mounts in cars like yours. So the motor mount is a rubber cushion between the motor and the frame. Well, when the cushion goes away, then we get a little bit of a vibration that's transferred throughout the car. And all of a sudden, we've got people rebuilding engines because it needs a $150 motor mount.
Yeah, the car, like I said, is 147,000 miles. And I suppose, would that manifest itself when you're sitting there idling at a stoplight?
Say that again? Well,
Would you see the motor mount effect when you're sitting there at a stoplight with your foot on the brake?
Well, that's not a good question, but I'll answer it anyway. If the problem comes and goes when I test the motor mounts and you're sitting here next to me and saying, there it is, oh, no, it's gone. No, it's still gone. How about now? No, it's still gone. Okay, how about now? Yeah, there it is. Well, if there it is matching when I'm testing that motor mount, then we're on the same page.
Yeah.
But the idea that we're going to guess to fix this is the one I'm objecting to, Mark. There's no guessing here. You've already guessed. You've already spent a bunch of money guessing.
I spent about $780 on the three things I told you. Now, I did prod them to
Caller
do the PCV because the same thing happened, like I said, 8 years ago. I took it to a Ford dealer. That's among one of the things they did. It was exactly the same symptom.
Okay, well, the PCV, gosh darn it. Okay, we're going to have to move on. Hang on, Bob. I'm going to get to you in a minute. Mark, listen to me carefully. PCV, positive crankcase ventilator. It's a stupid little $2 valve that sucks the fuel fumes out of the motor and sends them back through the engine. It's a circular device. You know what the symptom is of a PCV valve that plugs up? The answer is there is none. Do you know what the symptom is of a PCV valve that's stuck open? You know what the answer is? There is none.
Nope.
The reason the PCV valve needs to be replaced is because it gets so gummed up, it can no longer vent the internal pressure of the engine, which will cause some small oil leaks to resurface. And so you go in and you go, oh, well, look. And then you pull the PCV valve out and go, oh, my God, and look at all that pressure inside that engine. Tuk, 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 plug in a new one, stick it in the valve cover, and then you go, oh. And then you pull it back out and you go, oh, okay, well, we're vacuuming the pressure out now. Thank you very much. Goodbye. So it's PCV valves. I could take your PCV valve out and I could stick a carrot in that line and you could drive to New York City. So see, that's what I mean. You can't get on the internet and fix your car. So the PCV valve, and just because they did a PCV valve 150 years ago, it doesn't mean that it's going to do it today. I got to go. Bob, you're up next. How are you?
Good morning. I had my car serviced Friday, and I've got a time and mileage-based recommendation for my next service.
Okay.
And it's to perform a fuel injection and throttle body service, and the car's got 32,400 miles on it, and it runs perfect.
You want to play hardball? Not with me, but maybe with whoever told you that?
Well, I asked him. I says, there's no symptoms. And told him I'd think about it.
Well, let me just tell you what. That fuel system flush is the vernacular is really, it's a wallet flush.
Yeah.
Okay.
I figured that's
what it was. And here's what, now, just for future reference, though, okay, this is what you're going to do. If that happens again, or if you go back again, or whatever, you go, you know, I'm just so frazzled about this car. Let me go get the owner's manual and let's look, and you show me where it says in the owner's manual that I need to do this at 30. Oh, well, you're in Arizona and the owner's manual's not written for Arizona. Oh, well then, all right, order me an Arizona owner's manual, because there's no such thing.
I already went through the owner's manual and I couldn't find where it said to do anything like that.
This is our industry at its worst, making up these, and I want to tell you something. I could make a killing doing flushes. I mean, to tell you, the machine is efficient. Oh, it has presentation. It has bells and whistles and music and smoke and all of this other kind of stuff. There's nothing there for you. If you need fuel injection, you're going to have a check engine light. You're going to have a code, and you're going to have a rough idle, or you're going to have a little hitch in the giddy up. With none of that, save your money. But what symptom are you going to fix? They're not going to have an answer for it. Show me in the owner's manual. They're not going to have an answer for that either. But boy, they're real happy to sell you a fuel system flush, because you know why? Because it puts a heck of a lot of money in their pocket, and it's a no harm, no foul kind of thing. There is no risk here at all. There's no risk.
You know, it's amazing, though. I've heard you say all that before, and then when they actually say it to you, it gets your attention. Plus, I've got an extended warranty on the darn thing. But I did go through the part of the owner's manual. I couldn't find anything that says to do that, so I'm going to turn them down. But it is amazing how it makes you think when they actually say it to you, even though you know better.
Okay. What you can do is, it's okay. Look, just write it on the back of your business card that I need this kind of flush, and put the amount there on there and date it, okay? Just do that, and I'll put it with my stuff, and the next time I bring it in, I'm going to look and find that card. They won't even do that.
Yeah.
They won't even do that.
Well, what I said was written here.
Yeah. Well.
So they have time and mileage based recommendation, and then they've got based on the standard manufacturer standards. It's just a bunch of bull, I know, regarding time and mileage, this vehicle, and after checking your history, service history, and everything. But like I say, the car runs perfect.
Yeah, well, you did a good job for yourself.
It's psychologically, to me, it's amazing that it got my attention, and I've really thought about it quite a little bit. So
it's fraud. It's fraud. I'm trying to sell you.
But it's being conned, and
it's
when you know
fraud.
Better, sometimes it makes you think.
It's a criminal act. I am telling you something that isn't true. I am telling you, you need something. I need to do something to your car because you need it, and because we recommend it, and because it's almost mandatory. It's just, there's nothing there. I think the last time we did a fuel injection flush was for a diagnostic. We had a misfire on number 5 and number 7. They're cylinders next to one another. And so we thought, well, we're just going to run some fluid through this and see if one of them cleans up or if this makes any difference at all. Well, we went in and we flushed it and nothing happened. It made no difference whatsoever. So then we took 5 out and swapped it with 3. So we just moved some injectors around and the problem moved. So it had to be a bad injector and I couldn't flush it better. So we just put an injector in it. And that's all there was
to
it.
They've got no cars to sell, so they've got to come up with some revenue someplace, I guess.
I don't know. It's really disappointing. Really disappointing. My industry is showing its underwear right in front of everybody. So, thank you, Bob.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you something there. If you think that spending $200 or $300 to have your fuel injection, your fuel system serviced and flushed is a good idea, then I would think that you just take your money someplace else and get drunk and take all your friends with you or something. I don't know, because it's just not something that, why don't we change the air in your tires while we're there? Why don't we just put fresh air in your tires? And let's go ahead and just do a whole bunch of stuff on your car just because it makes you feel better and it makes me feel better because I make more money. We'll be back. Well, good morning. Welcome back, everybody. 23 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 o'clock until noon talking about car and car repair stuff. And as you can see, my panties are kind of wadded up about all this talk about flushing your fuel injectors and doing all this kind of stuff. So Jeremy and I have decided that we are going to start a new company, and we're going to make it mobile. We're going to actually come to your house, and this falls in line with all the other kind of this is what you need to have done, in spite of the fact that it's not part of your owner's manual. Okay, it's not in there, but you need to have this done, but just trust me on this. So Jeremy and I are going to start a company, and number one, we're going to come out and change the air in your tires. Really and truly, it can't be a good idea for you to have air in your tires that's 10 years old. It just can't be. It has to be better for your tires and better for the safety of your family if we can put new air in your tires. Now, the second part, Jeremy came up with this, and I thought it was just genius. We are going to start a company that's going to sanitize the lower portion of the driver's seat. You can imagine, I don't need to draw a picture for you here, okay, folks? I can just tell you that that's the number one seat in the car. That's the one, obviously, every mile that's driven, somebody had to have their butt in that seat because it ain't going anywhere without a butt in the seat in the driver's side. And then, of course, it's just that's going to be by far the dirtiest seat of all of the seats in the car. So we are going to design and build a seat sanitizer where we take the seat out. We're going to put it in this big cubed thing. We're going to push a couple of buttons, and then all of a sudden, all these little brand new bugs are going to be set free, and they're going to go in and eat up all the ugly in the seat that you can find. That the bugs can find. And this is going to be something we're going to do at your house.
$129.99, what a bargain.
$129.99, like Jeremy says, it's a bargain. So we're going to sanitize the driver's seat, because in reality, that's the one that needs to be. I mean, come on. How many people are getting sick because the driver's seat hasn't been sanitized? And of course, fresh air in your tires. I can't imagine why anybody hasn't thought of that before. So that's exactly what we're going to do. It's going to be Mark and Jeremy, M&J Seat Sanitizing Services. Oh, if I get in trouble, Jeremy, I'll just tell them it was your idea.
Well played, sir.
All righty. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, Nate, up there at Pinnacle Peak and I-17. I'm just always been impressed with Nate. Nate is just a quiet, gentle giant. He has hands like tennis rackets. When he shakes your hand, he doesn't really shake your hand. He shakes your whole side of your body. He's the nicest guy in the world. But when it comes to Chevys and Dodge and Fords, in the light duty trucks, otherwise 1 ton and so forth, up to 450s on many of them. Nate's just really a good guy. He knows those cars, those trucks, those diesels. So if you're interested and you've got a problem with a diesel, rather than spend a whole lot of time on Google and adding all these engine ideas to your head bone, then maybe call Strictly Diesel and just say to them, here's what I got, here's the code I got, here's what the car or the truck is doing. Is it something you've seen before? And I'm not going to ask you to bid it blindly, but what would the diagnostic be for to take a look at it and determine what's causing my problem? That's very simple. And Nate can handle that. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is open Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, and you can get more information from my best car repair shops list under Diesel Shops listing, because Nate's there. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Chris, you're up. How can I help you?
I have a question about my air conditioning in my 2019 Ford Edge ST. Been having an issue for quite some time where when we start the vehicle and sometimes when we're driving, the air conditioning would suddenly just seem like it goes completely off, but it's still on. And then after a while, it just suddenly come gushing back on. And sometimes it'll just do that intermittently where it'll go down, come back up, go down, come back up. Like right now, it's fine, but this is an issue we've been having for a while. We took it to a couple of different Ford dealerships, and neither one could really figure out what was going on. So I thought I'd give you a call to see if you might have an idea or any suggestions on how we can probably try to get this problem rectified.
Yeah, the biggest problem we have is that what you're talking about is not clear to me, so I'm going to clear it up right now, and I'm going to arm you with the right information and what to say. I want to know if the volume of air is the problem and the volume goes from good volume to no volume, or is it the temperature of the air you're concerned with? Answer that.
It's more the volume, because the temperature is fine. It's still cold, but the volume, it's like that's a really good word to use, because it's kind of like when you're turning the volume down on your radio, it goes down and you turn it all the way back up real high. So that's a really good word for it. So the volume goes down, and then it suddenly just comes right back.
Okay. And that's why it's so important. It's you've answered the question beautifully. And so now what I want you to do I suppose you probably got your air conditioning controls on auto. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. I want you to take it out of max air. I want you to go and take control, put it on fan speed four and put it on center vent. Take it out of the automatic. Take control and make it, and tell the air conditioning control panel, I want cold air, and then I want you to put the temperature all the way down to like 60.
Okay.
I'm going to force it out of its default. The question is if it's a volume problem, there's only going to be three places air is going to come out of that dashboard: from the floor, center vent, and defrost. There's only three places. So the question is when you have a substandard flow from the center vents, where the hell's air going? Is it going to the floor? Or is it going to the defrost? And another thing is when you put it on, when you turn your air on, are you putting it on automatic, or are you picking high blower or low blower, or are you picking the speed of the blower motor?
Sometimes it'll be on auto, but then I'll go in and I'll start playing with the controls. I'll put it all the way up to 7, which is the max setting, and then I'll put it down to 4 and 3 and everything like that. Then suddenly everything starts working just normal after I do all that.
All right, you stay right there, and we'll be right back. So it's 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here every Saturday on KKNT 960, and we're talking about car repair questions and problems. And you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Let me talk real quick about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. There's only one shop in Mesa that I can recommend, and it's Thompson's. I've known Brian and Thelma's families since the late 60s and early 70s. They were in the gas station business back then. These young people, Brian and his wife Thelma, they've smelled gasoline since they were just little kids. They are really good at what they do. They've been around a long time. They're ASC certified and their technicians are also there. And they keep your vehicle in tip-top shape. All you have to do is bring it in for an oil change every once in a while and they'll tell you this is what you'll need next time or the day after, or you don't need anything. But that's the whole idea behind oil changes, is just kind of let me take a peek at the car. So in Mesa, the only place I can recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Chris?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'd be willing to bet $50 that what's probably going on with the car is we're freezing the unit up. And when we freeze the unit up, then we shut the system down and we put it into what we call defrost. So behind the glove box, there's a radiator called an evaporator. And, of course, cold Freon goes through it. Behind it is a fan. And so if we don't have that fan blowing some volume of air, it's just going to freeze the evaporator up. Now, let me ask you a question. When you park that thing, do you have a lot of water? Do you see a lot of water when you come back to it on the passenger side floorboard outside the car?
No, I don't.
Okay. The reason I ask you that is because I'm looking to see if there's evidence of defrost of ice, because if the fan is just hardly blowing over the evaporator, then it's nothing's going to happen. It's just going to freeze it up more and more and more. In your particular case, I think I would tell you unequivocally, I am not prepared to tell you to spend any money on this problem right now. Here's what I want you to do. Do you know the difference between normal and max air?
Yeah.
Okay. Normal is outside air. We cool it off and put it inside the car. And maximum is like the air conditioning in your house where we're recirculating. Normal air is like a swamp cooler. So I want you, for some period of time, to just use your air conditioning in one of those two modes. So pick okay. normal and pick outside air, and I want your fan speed to be better than one or two. I'd like to see your fan speed at 3 and 4. And so if you say to me, if I do this, then the volume doesn't change. But if I do that, then the volume changes. I'm quite sure that this system's working good. And I'm quite sure it's just whatever you're doing, however you're flavoring up that air conditioning control panel, it's probably causing something to say, okay, we're a little cold on this side. Let's start into defrost mode. And during that period of time, we're going to substantially change the airflow out of the vents. Last but not least, when it does change the airflow, I want you to make a conscious effort to put your hand up there on the defrost vents, then the center vents, and then kind of reach down by your foot and see if you find the air in those three places. You shouldn't really feel air in all three of those places. The question is did it go from center vent to floor? And so all the air is now at the floor, where you think it's a volume problem, and it is, but we just redirected the air to the floor. So I don't think you have a problem that's worth fixing, and I don't think you have a problem that needs to be fixed. I think we just need to figure out how to best get you to set the controls, and I'm just asking you to vary the controls and see if you can change the problem.
Okay. Yeah, I can certainly do all that, but the thing is, this is my wife's car, so I gotta tell her that as well.
Bob.
So.
You could do this. In that case, what I do is, I have a wife too, and we fight about air conditioning all the time. So I say, honey, this is what I would say. Honey, I want you to crack the passenger window down about an inch, and I want you to run it on normal, and I want you to run it on fan speed 3. And then if things change, just let me know. But and then she says, nothing's changed, it's fine. Okay, good. Let's go to fan speed 2. And she says, okay, now we have the loss of volume. Well, when we slow down the fan speed, we're going to freeze up the evaporator a little easier because we don't have as much air flowing across the evaporator. So those are the kinds of things I think between you and your wife, you can figure out that it's more of a control issue with respect to how they're being set up. And all you have to do is modify it slightly, and then the volume problem will go away. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Sounds real good. Thank you very much, Mark.
Good luck to you. Thank you very much, Chris. We're going to take a break, but who's in hold right now? Who's in queue?
We got Bob and then Chad as well.
Bob and Chad, you stay there. We'll be back in just a minute. When it comes to the West Side, you've got Larry Harker's Auto up there at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's been around a long time, since 1967. The folks at Larry Harker's Auto really know how to fix cars, and I have many stories about sending somebody on that side of town and having them get their magic wand out, wave it, find the problem, fix the problem, and make the customer happy. Now, they do oil changes and brake jobs and like everybody else, but when it comes to diagnosticians, Larry Harker's got two of them there that are really, really good. So if you've got a problem where every time you wake up in the morning and it's 6 o'clock in the morning your horn honks, then probably Larry Harker's would be a good place to park the car the night before and let them figure out why the horn is honking. That's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob, you're up first. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call. My question's on oil change intervals. I've got a 1998 Chevy Silverado and a 2007 Ford Freestyle, and I changed a few years ago to full synthetic, and I buy the extended life filters. What do you suggest as far as maximum time I can before changing the oil on them?
I think you should be somewhere in the vicinity of 8,000 to 12,000 mile intervals on both of them. And if you're using synthetics on both of them, now, how many miles a year do you drive on each one of those cars?
Okay, that's what I was going to tell you. On Freestyle, that's my wife. She drives 10,000 to 12,000 miles, but I only drive about 4,000 to 5,000.
Okay, good. That's okay. I got you covered on this one. Yes, your wife gets the synthetic, and we're going to change her oil at the beginning of the summer every year. Okay? So we're going to send her through the blistering summer with fresh oil. We can mm-hmm. do that. All right, you only use your car to go to your girlfriend's house and back, so you're at 3 or 4,000 miles.
No, I don't.
I'm teasing you.
I know you're
So you're doing 3 or 4 or 5,000 miles a year. Why don't you use a semi-synthetic, because it's going to be cheaper, and the semi-synthetic has an upper limit of 7,500 miles, so you could fit into that category just fine. Now, how many miles a year do you drive? Did you say 3, 4, 5? What'd you say?
Usually 4,000 to 5,000.
Okay, because you could use a conventional oil for 4,000 or 5,000 miles. You don't have to put a synthetic in there. Conventional oil.
Lazy.
Say that again.
I said I was just being lazy because I changed my own oil, so I thought, well, you know, that changes often.
Oh, and it's true that conventional oil people do it at 3,000 miles or so, but if you go into a semi-synthetic, you're at 5 to 7. So if you change your own oil, just change the different kind of, not the brand, but just get a semi-synthetic and use that on your car. And if I were you, I'd change both of your cars at the beginning of the summer. And as far as her, though, we're going to use a full synthetic because we need that extra miles on hers.
All right.
So that's what I would do. Here's the common. Regular Fred Flintstone oil, which is called conventional, it's 3,000 to 5,000 miles. Then you got a semi-synthetic, which is 5 to 7,500. Then you got synthetic that's 7,500 to 15,000. So each one of those oils steps up in quality, steps up in protection, steps up in longevity, all that stuff. So that's what we're in right now. I use a semi-synthetic in my Dodge trucks. I change it once a year and I run it about 15,000 miles. No problem at all. No problem at all.
So do you, with the semi-synthetic, do you have to buy that expensive, the better oil filter, or is that just a good idea anyway?
I don't like the oil filter game at all. I'm going to tell you, this is the truth, and my staff will laugh if you ask them that. I buy the cheapest oil filter I can find when I'm at the ranch. I'll call around and find out the cheapest oil filter. It'll be a name brand anyway. But I'm right. not a fan of the fancy-dancy oil filters that make promises that nobody can measure. And nobody cares. The question is, Mark, how many times do you work on a motor where the oil filter was the cause of the damage to the motor? And the answer is never. Never.
Wow.
Never. So we can put all kinds of magnets on it, and we can do all this fancy-dancy stuff and talk about long life, and this one can do this. The bottom line is when that gets to a certain point of plugged up, it's going to bypass, and that means it's not going to be filtering your oil anymore. The oil filters of today will easily handle 10 to 15,000 miles worth of oil. No problem at all. So I'm not a fan of spending extra money and getting an oil filter that promises me to take care of me and love me for the rest of my life.
Well, thank you. That saved me some money.
All righty, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
You bet.
Day. Thank you.
Chad, you're up.
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
I called probably 6 months ago. I've got a 2012 Dodge Ram 1500 in my airbag light. It was coming on and going off back then, and now it's on permanently. And you suggested that I turn the wheel and kind of bang on the wheel, you know, back and forth, and that didn't do anything. Got any other suggestions?
Well, this someone has to just kind of track it down. How many miles are on the truck?
85.
Okay. The airbag light is on because the computer's lost sight of the airbag. And that's the end of the deal. I was thinking that if we had a bad connection, if you banging on the steering wheel oftentimes will cause the light to go out.
Let me tell you this. Last weekend I went up to the rim, and I was driving down a dirt road, and for the past few months the light has been solid. It hasn't gone on or off. And it was going on and off.
Okay.
On the dirt road.
Okay. The question is someone has to go through and find out where we lost sight of the airbag. So the airbag itself, there's a module that fires the airbag, and the module has lost sight of the airbag. And the airbag, does it say passenger side or driver side?
No, it doesn't say anything. So
okay.
that was kind of my next question. Is there's no telling really which one of the airbags is non-functioning, right?
No, there is. We have sophisticated equipment we're going to plug into the truck, and we're going to talk to it in all kinds of coded language, and we're going to burn incense and wave chickens around our heads and all that other kind of stuff. But to be honest with you, I think what's going on, we have a steering wheel that moves with the airbag in it, but it's constantly moving. So we have this little device that's a ribbon, and the ribbon keeps the stationary part of the steering column attached to the moving part of the steering column, which is the steering wheel. And so we've got this little ribbon that goes into a circle. So when you turn right, it stays there. And when you turn left, it stays there. Well, I'm betting that ribbon, and it just escapes me right now what the word I'm looking for is, but this ribbon underneath the steering wheel that keeps, that has this ribbon that's going to fire the airbag when it needs, that we've lost sight of that. And more than likely, that ribbon's bad. And then you say, well, I'm driving down the road and it's bouncing around and going on and going off. Then I'm even further energized that the clock spring, that's what it's called. God almighty, thank you, Lord, for hitting me in the head with that. It's called the clock spring. And the clock spring on one side of it, it's stationary, and the other side is moving with the steering wheel. And when that comes apart, it turns on the light. The driver's airbag will not work, and all you do is pop the steering wheel off of it, replace the clock spring, put everything back together, and you're done. That's the best I can offer you.
What kind of price are we looking at? Something like that? You got any idea?
No, I'm scared to guess, but I'm thinking that
take
you're
it to Kurt.
Say that again.
I said take it to Kurt.
Well, oh yeah, I mean, with Eric wouldn't have any problem, or neither one of them would have any problem with that at all. That most of the time we can manhandle the steering wheel and get things to happen, and once we do that, then we're home free. We diagnosed it. So, you pull the horn ring off, then you pull the steering wheel off, and then underneath the steering wheel is the clock spring, and then you look at it, and oftentimes you can see where it's bad, oftentimes you can see where it's burnt, oftentimes you can see where it's torn, all that kind of stuff. You might be a little early at 85,000 miles, but it doesn't really make any difference. Right now, with the airbag light on, that airbag's not going to deploy in an accident. That's probably something that should motivate you to get it fixed. And if you go to Kurtz and they can't fix it, I'll pay the bill. I'll pay the diagnostic fee.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right, you bet. Oh, boy, 602-508. Where are we at here? 54, 58. Yeah, we're okay. We got 4 minutes. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Car question, you can call me in. Automatic Transmission Exchange, Phil, has been around Automatic Transmission Exchange since 1968. Depends on who you ask. Phil did start with a broom. Phil did start at Automatic Transmission Exchange as somebody who knew how to use a broom. Today, he runs the operation. Today, he's walked all the way through all the transmissions from the 2-speed and 3-speed power glides and the old Chrysler transmissions, all those old ones, all the way to 8 and 10-speed electronics of today. Here's the issue. Phil will tell you, it's just a matter of how we shift the car. That's all. How we shift the car. Are we going to let the computer decide when to shift it? Are we going to do it with the driver's right foot? Or are we going to do it by looking at the speedometer or the tachometer? You see, all of those things are come together to tell us when to shift the transmission from first to second, second to third, third to fourth to fifth, fifth to overdrive, and then so forth and so on. That's how it's all, what it's all about. It's just a matter of load, speed, RPM, weather, that kind of stuff. So the transmissions of the old days were just really throttle. So your foot was what made the transmission shift. And you all know, many of us old guys, you stuff it to the floor and it automatically dropped into second gear and took off like crazy. That's passing gear back then. Well, it's the same way. It's now we do it electronically. So Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange been around the block, and you just need to meet him and shake his hand, and you'll know that he's been around the block. If you have a problem and you can duplicate it, make an appointment and ask him if you can take a technician for a short drive because you have practiced making this happen and you feel confident that you can show him exactly what you want him to identify and fix. Those are the kinds of customers that we transmission shops really do hug. Because if you'll just teach us how to make it happen or go away or how to make it just stay there, that's perfect. And that's what it's all about. So at 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange, ask for Phil. And if he's not there, most anybody at the front counter can help you. All righty. We've 56 minutes after the hour. We've got another couple of minutes. And just I want to reiterate that in car repair, there is a process. If you have a problem, we need to verify the symptoms. We need to see it happen. Seeing the symptoms isn't going to tell us how to fix the car, but it's going to tell us what area of the car it's in. And in addition to that, once we get the symptoms situated, and we can fix the symptoms, then more than likely we fix the car. And that's what it's all about. It's a matter of tracking. And part of that does not include, in at least my shop and many of the other shops in town that I respect, we don't spend a lot of our time at Google. We're not on the internet. We're not asking other people to help us fix the cars. We pretty much know what we need to do. So not too long ago, a lady had an air conditioning issue. She didn't understand the difference between maximum and normal. Maximum is like recirculatory. It's the air conditioning in your house. Normal is a swamp cooler. You have to drop the windows down just a little bit. We're going to push air into the cab of the car or the truck, cold air, but it's going to go out the crack in the window. If you don't drop a window down in the normal range, then you're just like blowing into a pop bottle. It's very difficult to keep your car cool. So those are the kinds of things. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. You're welcome to email me about any car question you have. If you would leave me a phone number, I'd like to call you back because inevitably I'm going to have some questions that I'm going to ask you to to discuss with me. That's the way I can help you the best. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Wear your seatbelt. Drive safe. God bless you. See you next Saturday.